Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We're coming to H time. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day, great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Butler is there, and the Astros drop this one 5-4. Astros had a couple of leads in this game and couldn't hold on. A 3-run sixth inning with Kyle McCann delivering a 2-run home run in that inning. Give the A's a 5-4 final, and the Astros have dropped the first 2 games of this series in 6 out of 8 overall.
Yuck! 6 out of 8 overall. I hadn't seen that part of the whole thing. I know they've lost to the A's twice, and they play them again today. Welcome in, everybody. There is no reason to play cool in the gang today. The Astros, the lead shrunk last night. 3.5 games it's down to now, as we welcome you in on a Thursday here on Payne and Pendergast. I'm Sean Pendergast. He's Seth Payne. How are you this morning, Seth Payne?
I'm good, man. I'm fine. I'm fine. Altuve's going to be just fine. I wish you'd stop talking about it. You just won't shut up about it, worried about it. Just okay. He's going to be fine. For those of you who missed it, strained what I'm guessing is an oblique in an at-bat. He just stayed in the at-bat, tried to bunt, and then he's out and he's day-to-day.
Thought about that after the game when they replayed it, and and just to get people up to speed, the Astros lose 5-4 last night. Lead is 3.5 games. Yes, the big story from this game is not the loss. The big story of this game is Jose Altuve leaving in the middle of the game. We're going to hear from Altuve in just a second, but what Seth is referring to is on a pitch, on a swing that made it 2 strikes, he kind of stepped out of the box and was like, this side of mine feels a little funky.
Skipper, come on out here. I got a little
Something going on here in the rib cage.
I got some gremlins in the rib cage.
Gremlins in the rib cage. So he gets back in the batter's box, and I guess instead of taking himself out of the game and letting, you know, somebody come in and hit for him, because they moved Dubon to second base the next inning from left field, and I forget the whole rigmarole they did to get the lineup set. But instead of bringing somebody else to hit for him with 2 strikes, Altuve just decides, like, I'm going to bunt here, and on 2 strikes, fouls it off himself, and he just walks to the dugout. I'm like, all right, I mean, it's this.
I cannot wait to get out of September. I hope it's as they exit on into the playoffs or something. But Chaz McCarthy, Chaz.
Oh, yeah, Chaz,
you can't even find money. This is like you find money in the street and then get hit by a car.
Yeah,
we're doing everything 1930s style today. Chaz McCormick with a broken wrist, Altuve with
got
a
hit
mysterious
by an Edsel.
Side injury. Yeah, it feels like 1929.
Yeah,
what it feels like, Sean.
Chaz's injury is a broken finger, actually. So he's
got same thing.
Yeah, well, he says he's going to be bad. Let's hear from all the parties involved in this. Astros lose last night. Well, not a good night last night. They lose again to the A's, and now we've got some injury issues. Hunter Brown was not great. He was not vintage. I don't know if he's been pitching long enough to say vintage Hunter Brown. He was not the Hunter Brown that we've seen for most of the last few months last night. So they lose to the A's. Let's get to Altuve first. Here's what it sounded like on the broadcast.
Used his timeout, then called for the manager to talk to him. Something with his twisting motion, it seems like he's showing.
Yeah, he doesn't look comfortable at all.
We'll see what this next swing looks like here, 2-2. He's not even going to swing. He's going to bunt, and that's a strikeout. That's not a good sign. See if he stays in the game. It's not what you want to see with Altuve bunting with 2 strikes, not wanting to swing them.
Yeah, so that's what it sounded like on the broadcast. Let's hear from Altuve. This is he met with the media for about a minute or so. So I'm going to play the whole thing, and you guys tell us, does this sound like somebody who's, where it's, hey, no big deal, with this latest injury with Altuve?
How did you feel in that swing or during that at bat?
Yeah, just felt a little something on the side, but on the right side, and decided to not take another swing.
Had it been bothering you before?
No.
Just on the one, sir.
Just on that one, sir.
You had oblique issues last year. Is this in any way comparable?
Nope. Not the same, yeah.
How's it different? How's it different?
I don't know. I'll tell you tomorrow. Like, sometimes you have to wait until the next day and see how you feel.
What kind of a treatment you just get at this point? I just
wait until, I think it's too early to get something done. Wait until tomorrow, see how I feel, and go from there.
How frustrating is this to happen now with October so close?
Yeah, no, like I said, I'm not really worried. Like I said, maybe I just wake up tomorrow and I'm good to go. So we don't really want to take any decisions tonight because, you know, normally in an injury, you wait until the next day and see how you feel.
Okay, so that was Altuve last night. It's an afternoon game today. So 1:10, first pitch. The lineup might even come out while we're still on the air. Who knows, before 10 o'clock. I would be willing to bet my bottom dollar that he does not play today. Even if he wants to play today, this feels like an Espada holding him back from playing situation today, right? Day game, yeah. the old adage, yeah. Seth, day game after a possible oblique issue, you don't start the guy, you know?
I would, yeah, I think your bottom dollar is safe there.
Yeah.
I think you go ahead and put all your money on that bottom dollar.
Yeah, yeah.
I like the idea of Altuve. I don't know. I like the idea of him sleeping. You know, you talked several times about he'll have to see when he wakes up in the morning how it feels. Altuve sleeping like in a, like one of those old style full length like night what do you call it? It's like
night
a nightgown.
It's a nightshirt.
Yeah.
It goes,
with a little cap on.
It goes down and then he's a pointy cap like that, just flopping down over his shoulder. Like Grandpa Altuve Joe in Charlie in the Chocolate Factory.
yes. Sleeping peacefully, and probably he's vaguely aware but doesn't think about the fact that the entire city of Houston is waiting to see how Altuve feels when he wakes up. I wish he were bigger on social media so he would just like he could update everybody. Wake up, go live, and be like, I feel great.
Yeah.
I actually it feels awesome.
On Instagram, we need him somewhere between what he is now and what Shannon Sharp was yesterday. We don't need everything.
What did Shannon Sharp do yesterday?
Oh, you didn't see this?
I saw some joke about how it looked like he had just woken up or something.
No, he left his phone on, or somehow his phone, Instagram Live. It was aimed at the floor.
Yeah.
He was in relations.
He butt-dialed an Instagram Live during coitus?
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
wow.
Yes. Wow. Yeah. And then explained it on his podcast. Like, he didn't shy away from it. Ben, do we have that by any chance? Yeah, here's Shannon Sharp. This is a quick one. This was Shannon Sharp. He was on his podcast later on and said this.
It was me being a healthy, active male. I mean, y'all thought I was bull jiving. Hey, I'll get it in. Real talk. Hey, yo.
Yeah. He didn't shy away from it. So we don't need that level
of... No jab there.
We don't need that level of voyeurism from Altuve. But yeah, it would be nice to see him like get up and hop out of bed and attack the day with like somebody who doesn't have a pulled muscle in his side.
It is early and everything. I'm just curious, though. Was it pretty graphic what you could hear or anything? Or was it just a bunch of...
From her, it was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Him, you just heard a lot of heavy
breathing. Maybe all you heard was him and like you couldn't even be sure that it was...
No. No, it was.
It was.
There was definitely somebody else involved.
I think that might have been. What are the chances that? Would you bet your bottom dollar that was intentional?
No. I don't know. No, I wouldn't. To answer your question, I wouldn't bet my bottom dollar on that.
It's got engaged. It would get some engagement. It did get some engagement.
It did get some engagement, and it got further engagement when people, screen recorded it and posted it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yep. Sure. So, anyways, so back to Altuve. I don't think he plays today. What's your concern level after hearing him talk to the media for a minute there? Does it even matter? Do you believe anything that comes from any Astro when it comes to
injury? Well, there's nothing to believe or disbelieve there. I mean, like, he's got, if it's a muscle strain or something, you genuinely don't know.
Well, he said he's not worried.
Right, okay, that. I mean, I'm guessing he felt like it was muscular and you might have tweaked it and then you just don't know really until you wake up the next. The fact that it wasn't like they were going off to get imaging or something, that I feel relatively optimistic that he's going to be fine sometime in the next couple of weeks. It's just that right now, your chance to take the lead back last
good.
Night, you're hoping that Gamel can come up big last night this team needs an Altuve right this moment.
You just waltzed past your next couple weeks comment like there's more than 2 weeks left in the season.
I'm saying it's a. I mean, you can hear the frustration in his voice. Where sometimes when it's just something muscular, where it feels like a strain, you don't have any definitive answers.
Yeah,
which I'll blame the Astros for being so opaque about their injury situation so often that I feel like the default mode for people is, they're lying to us. But this is genuinely a situation where, I could see. I mean, it's likely exactly what he said it was. They don't know. But sure, would I be surprised if they already knew that it was season ending or something and the Astros just didn't want to say anything about it? I wouldn't be 100% surprised.
Yeah, that's my point. Like, my default switch now with Astro injuries is set to being worried about it because they're never honest about it. And I think the players are conditioned to probably air to the side of like, no, it's all good. That's that smoke is not your house burning down. That's fine. That's just somebody having a campfire in their backyard. It's fine. No big deal. There's only 17, 18 games left in the season. Now this I could see. The fact that he has a recent history of oblique injuries. Remember Altuve missed a bunch of time last year. That is the one thing I could say that quells my worry is that, all right, he may have just felt a little something and was doing that preventatively, like, I don't know, maybe this to turn into something. You know what I mean?
He stayed in not to take a swing, but to bunt, but okay, well, still two strikes on a, So I don't know what to take from that. So I would put my concern meter at a 6 out of 10.
Yeah. That's
I'm not gonna miss him in the field all that much, but yes, Altuve at the plate, he'd gotten way back on track in September after being kind of humdrum through the month of August.
I felt bad for Chaz because Chaz had just started to find his swing again, you know.
Yeah,
and Chaz is probably here's Joe Espada. Chaz probably headed to the IL.
Oh yeah, so Chaz has a small fracture in his right hand, so obviously that will be an IL.
Then you're rolling out the rest of the year?
Oh, I can't tell. I can give you a timeline. Just right now, it's just, you know, obviously IL.
Do you have a corresponding year?
Not yet. All right, thank you, guys.
All right, and Chaz spoke to the media. We don't have time to get to it here because we got to get out. But Chaz thinks he'll be back by playoff time.
Yeah, it's not a big I guess deal. With Chaz, the biggest worry is just, all right, like this is not a guy you feel like, oh, yeah, he'll hop right back in and be hitting 350 no time at all.
Right, yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Timing, he wakes up timed out perfectly.
Yeah.
He's like old timing belt Chaz, that's what we call him.
He was just starting to swing the bat again, man. That's too bad. It's too bad about Chaz. All right, we're off and running. We've got a lot of Texans to get to here, man. Sunday night game. Bears coming to town. You can hear it right here on Sports Radio 610. Seth and I get started at 4:20 is the start time. We're not doing any of that. 4:20 the start time for the pregame show. Texans countdown on Sunday afternoon. So be there for that. Joe Mixon is off to a hell of a start as a Houston Texan, and it got even better yesterday. Also, Nick Caserio talking on Texans All Access. This was interesting. The mechanics of acquiring Joe Mixon. Nick gave us an un-Casario-like window into what exactly they were also looking at doing at the running back position. So we'll get to that coming up next.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
First down lets you walk out of here with a win. Third down and 3 from the Houston 48 I formation. Stroud digs in. Here's the snap. Here's the toss to Mixon running right across the 50, 45. Tackled by Cross at the 41. Checkmate. That'll do it. The Texans will beat the Colts on opening day.
Mark Vandermeer on the call. That was the game-clinching third-down conversion against the Colts on Sunday. That plus the other 29 carries that he had for a $1.59 got Joe Mixon AFC Offensive Player of the Week honors yesterday. So Mixon in his first week as a Texan is already the best player at football on the offensive side in the AFC so far.
Already, yeah. One weekend. Now 30 carries a game. Not likely the plan for the entire season, but it is, look, they played a game plan, the Colts did, where they just flat out played a lot of soft coverages, just trying to limit the passing attack. And I don't want to say they conceded the run. I think they thought, well, our front seven can handle this pathetic Texans run-blocking offensive line. And the offensive line, and I'll add Cade Stover and Dalton Schultz to that, did a great job. And the other thing, too, about Mixon that doesn't show up on the stat line was he – I went back and I watched the blitzes yesterday with Drew Hodgson, former Texans center, just the blitz pickups, and, man, Mixon was awesome. Mixon was really good in pass protection. Ogunbowale and Damian Pierce were good in pass protection. The whole nuts and bolts football fundamental side of things for the Texans offense this year looks so much better. Yeah. And obviously Joe Mixon himself as a runner was just really, really good. But there's more to it than just the rushing yardage. Man, he is a shot in the arm in a lot of ways.
Yeah, here was D'Amico Ryans yesterday talking about what Joe Mixon brings to the offense.
I think Joe brings confidence, right? He brings confidence. He brings a energy, a swagger to our offense, right? The way he works at practice each and every day, guys feel that swagger, they feel that confidence, the energy that he brings, and that means a lot when you know you're handing the ball to a guy who is as confident as ever. Like, it means a lot to the offensive line. It gives them confidence to block a little longer, finish a little stronger, right? And that's just everybody around him, right, feels the energy that he provides.
So Joe Mixon, 101 of his 159 yards after contact. So two-thirds of his yards came after contact. That passes the eye test from the game. We'll hear from Nick Caserio in a second. I know it's 1 week, but as I've watched Joe Mixon like interact with his teammates, interact like he, you know, talking to the team after the game, all the stuff that we've had a window into, and then obviously the play on the field in week one, I'm wondering, like, wait, like why was Cincinnati so anxious to get rid of Joe Mixon? You know,
right. It is. I mean, we've talked about this before. The Joe Mixon, his style isn't suited best to what the Bengals were doing last year. They've turned into a team that's almost exclusively shotgun all the time. It's not a conventional rushing attack. And I wonder if the Bengals even realized it, or if they just thought, all right, Joe Mixon's on his decline.
Yeah.
But you see, and it's not like Joe Mixon can't run when they're in shotgun formations. Right. He's had some very good plays last year and on Sunday running out of the gun.
Yeah.
But when you really want to use him at his best, he's 7 yards deep in the backfield and just getting a full head of steam before he either hits the hole or before he makes his cutback. He just, because his vision is so good, he really creates a lot of stress on that defense, but especially when you get him running and he's got time to read the flow of the defense, it's a much better scheme fit for him this year.
Yeah, now look, they replaced him with a cheaper alternative, so money may have had something to do with it. Now, you know, the Bengals, yeah. Bengals are one of these teams that's paying a quarterback now, and they're paying T. Higgins a franchise. They didn't even get to a deal with Jamar Chase. You know, that's where they are right now. So I'm guessing finances, but not like he was breaking the bank. I mean, he was a decently paid running back. I just think, and especially with the way things are going in Cincinnati 1 week in. I mean, they lost to the Patriots in week one, and they play the Chiefs on Sunday this week in Kansas City. I mean, and Joe Burrow is rubbing his wrists now, and that's been the big story the last 24 hours, is all the Zapruder film and analysis going on with Joe Burrow and his wrist injury. Like, it's, I don't know. I mean, I'm glad Joe Mixon's on the Texans, but I'm really, it's a head-scratcher that
it's interesting, though, the fact that Zach Moss was the replacement. I think that's the part that was a little bit of a surprise. And I wonder if, you know, like, were the Bengals really thinking that they were going to get something out of Zach Moss that he's never really showed in his career?
Right.
He's had his career high is 794 yards rushing.
Yeah.
And on 4.3 yards per attempt. And it was respectable enough. You know, it's not like he was a schmuck against the Texans or anything when he was with the Colts. But It's not Joe Mixon, whether Joe Mixon's in his prime or not. Yeah, the Bengals, boy, the Bengals could really be... They might end up, like, obviously I don't want to read too much into week one, but there's a lot going on there in Cincinnati. They could end up being a huge disappointment.
Yeah, I mean, they're probably going to be 0-2 after this week, you know?
Especially if Joe Mixon goes off this year for the Texans,
yeah,
that's a real bad feel for Bengals fans, yes, and a bad look for the organization, right?
Yeah, no question.
By the way, I was on in Chicago yesterday.
Oh, and, what station? Our sister station?
970.
670. Was it 670? You're a 970?
Probably, okay. Yeah. There was a number before a 70.
Yeah, 670.
It was an upside down 9. Yeah. So, yeah, 670.
Yeah.
And one of our listeners who lives in Chicago, Eddie Hassan, reminded me that one of the questions they asked was, so is there a lot of chatter in Houston about, you know, Caleb Williams being the next C.J. Stroud? And I have
what'd
no
you say?
Memory. I don't remember. I asked Eddie. Eddie had tweeted it to me. He had reminded me that they asked me, and I said, what did I answer to that? Because I remember kind of being, I felt like I was blindsided by it. It wasn't supposed to be a hard question or anything. And I just like, no, I don't think a single person. The one thing I pointed out to them, I mean, the one interesting thing is that the Bears could have easily drafted C.J. Stroud.
Yeah.
You know, like Ryan Poles could have drafted C.J. Stroud. So this game, I haven't seen this in the national media at all. It's that the Ryan Poles, the GM of the Bears, he could have drafted C.J. Stroud.
Yeah, the first
so
pick
Caleb
the draft.
Williams, they did ask me when did it kind of click for C.J., and I said, well, ironically enough, it was in the second game last year when... it wasn't an alarming performance in the Ravens game last year. Not like Caleb Williams' performance in week one this year.
Right, right, right.
But he didn't, you know, there's nothing about that performance where he said, oh, yep, rookie of the year.
Yeah.
So it was in the second week where maybe they're hoping that Caleb Williams can click this week.
Well, I hope he clicks similar to CJ in that game and that he was clicking while they were trailing by 18
right.
points at halftime. That would be yeah. good. That would mean
I don't want him to at all. I want Ryan Poles to have the laser focus of everybody's attention on, wait a second, okay, so Caleb Williams looks like the new Bryce Young, and yeah. you could have drafted C.J. Stroud, but you're the genius somehow?
Yeah.
Okay.
It is funny, man. Like, C.J. has recalibrated. Like, every question about rookie quarterbacks this year included C.J. Stroud's name in it. You know, like, Stroud-like effect, and can he be the next C.J. Stroud? And it's C.J.'s
they
remarkable.
Had, they had... it's interesting. And I try to, whenever I'm in out of market, I try to explain that. It's like, it's not a slight against any other rookie quarterback.
Right.
But 670 there had Kurt Warner on earlier in the show or the day before.
Yeah.
And Kurt had done a good job of laying out just how rare it is what CJ's doing mentally.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't think you can expect that out of Caleb Williams coming out of, Lincoln's offense.
Lincoln Riley's offense. Yeah,
yeah.
Nick Caserio was on Texans All Access this week. He appears on there weekly with John Harris and Mark Vandermeer. It's always a good conversation. This was interesting. He talked about kind of the mechanics of acquiring Joe Mixon, like what was happening for that 24-hour period, because we know that was one of those situations where word got out that Cincinnati was cutting Joe Mixon, probably as a mechanism to do what exactly happened, which was get some GMs to call them so they could at least get something for him. Ended up being a 7th-round pick. The interesting part with this cut, take a listen to it, is Nick actually mixes in a couple other names that the Texans were interested in re-signing or signing.
The exact timing of it was overnight. They were announced that they were moving on from Joe, or they're going to release Joe. So anytime that something is done after the 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock central time period, it's not going to go on the wire and it's not going to be official until the following day at the 3 o'clock. So you have about 24 hours. So we were kind of working through that whole process. We were involved, made an attempt to re-sign Motor. We were involved in some of the Barkley stuff mm-hmm. as well. That was a position that we knew we were going to add a player at some point in some capacity. So when the opportunity presented itself with Mixon, it was something that we discussed internally. We had the discussion actually that morning. Coaching staff kind of went through it on their end. D'Amico and I had a conversation about it and then kind of made a decision. Well, look, if this is what the cost is, then it might be yep. worth doing, because we thought we had the ability to acquire a player that everybody liked that we thought could help our football team.
So the interesting thing there, the thing that caught everybody's attention, because we know what ended up happening. They trade a 7th for Mixon. Nick went on to talk about why they gave him the contract extension. It's a good interview. But the part where he said we were in on some of the Barkley stuff got people's attention, which was reported, but it's always more interesting to hear it come right from the horse's mouth, you know?
It's right. And
after the fact, too.
I guess, yeah, if Mixon had been held to 49 yards rushing on 30 carries, I don't know if he would have thrown that out there, but so far so good. It's not like Nick's the kind of guy that's going to take a victory lap or anything. Saquon Barkley. I mean, after week one, if anything, it's a big victory for running backs in general, I guess. Both of these guys are over that age of 27 that Joe Shane, the GM of the Giants, wouldn't stop talking about during Hard Knocks offseason. And, you know, they were both very valuable in week one for their respective teams. So this is not like a peeing contest between Joe Mixon and Saquon Barkley at this point. There is a certain part of Joe Mixon's game that I do like in comparison to Saquon, and it's just his ability to grind out yardage. And that if you're trying to sustain drives, if you're trying to close out wins, Joe Mixon over the course of his career is more steadily ground out successful rushing attempts. Like Barkley will get wrapped up at the line of scrimmage at times if the blocking is imperfect. Joe Mixon had some really good blocking in front of him in that game, but also did really well with imperfect blocking at times. He made the O-line right at times in a way that Saquon doesn't always do.
Yeah,
that's not a slight. Saquon Barkley would have been awesome, you know?
If we had Saquon, dude, yeah, that would have been fun for sure. But if you know how they do the at camp, at practice set, they do the situational stuff where on that big scoreboard they put first and 10, 34-yard line, you got a minute one, you're trailing by six, go. If somebody handed me the situation, there's 4 minutes left in a game, you're up by six, and you're starting at your own 30-yard line, you can take Saquon Barkley or Joe Mixon. I'm taking Joe Mixon in that situation. Yeah. You know, like to do what exactly happened against the Colts on Sunday at the end of the game.
Do you want to hear how I responded, or I can tell you how I responded to that question about Caleb Williams being the next?
Yes.
Okay. So Eddie Hassan, our listener who lives in Chicago, says that the question started with, so Seth, there is much chatter in Houston on how Caleb is the next CJ. And I told Eddie, like, God, I kind of blanked out. What did I say on that? He said, Seth, you're a true politician. Just sideswiped it and started talking about the natural rivalry with high draft picks and smooth transition to the newfound running game. I've re-listened to the question like 10 times, and each time I get more aggravated.
Aggravated at you. That you straddled the line and gave a politically correct answer to it. You needed to say.
I was honestly a little bit. I honestly, in the moment, was kind of. I felt sideswiped by a question that wasn't intended to be a gotcha or anything, because it was so far from anything I had even really. They basically were asking as part of that question also, is like, is that the big fan chatter in Houston? And I'm like, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Like Caleb Williams, it's kind of like that meme from Don Draper in Mad Men, where he says, "I don't think about you at all."
Yeah,
I think that's a little bit like we're like, "No, I've got
that would have been good." Okay, I think the answer, and I'm saying this without having heard the actual audio, so this is just what you and Eddie Hassan are telling me. I would have been really excited about one of two answers: one that where you're like, God, "No, we don't talk. Caleb Williams? We barely remember that he's your quarterback." Or two. Like, yeah, we talk about it. We talk about how freaking stupid it is that he gets compared to C.J. Stroud. Nobody gets compared to C.J. Stroud.
Yeah. It's not a C.J. versus anybody. It's C.J. and the way he operated as a rookie quarterback compared to just about every rookie quarterback that I've seen in my lifetime.
Right,
It was just different mentally.
Joe Mixon, man. Joe Mixon, the sixth time that a Texans running back has won AFC Offensive Player of the Week. Singletary won it last year, like less than a season ago. But before that, the last time was 12 years prior with Arian Foster. They went 12 years without a running back winning AFC Offensive Player of the Week. You almost win those by accident, like sometimes your team. You know what I mean? Like, if it's 12 years, you don't get one running back go off.
It is. Yeah. Like, yeah. Some random guy that's not actually ends up being any good or anything.
There's a lot of randos on the Texans. Anytime somebody wins offensive or defensive or special teams player of the week, they send the entire list out in the history of the team. that's won an award like that. Like, Tavier Thomas was Defensive Player of the Week one week back in the Culley season, you know?
Yeah. Even Lamar Miller at some point, I would have thought he would have gotten it. Yeah. You know, Lamar Miller was a quality back.
Hey.
You know, like, I feel bad that people barely even remember that he was a Texan.
He probably did in that game against the Texans back in 2015 that made them sign him.
But Lamar Miller had, I'm surprised that Lamar Miller didn't at least pick up one. Like, yeah. Not even throwing shade at him. He was a good running back.
He's a good running back. He had that big game against the Titans the week after Mr. McNair died, and Vandy had that great call on that touchdown. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought maybe like that week or something. I'm with you. All right, Payne and Pendergast, let's get to headlines. We have a lot of headlines to get to with the Astros, and at least today, none of them are good. We've got other Texans headlines, a little bit of injury news. Are we concerned about this with the Texans? And yes, there has been a statement from Rusty Harden on the Deshaun Watson situation, so brace yourself for that. We'll get to that in headlines coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, let's start with, what do we want to start with? Let's start with the Astros. The Astros,
do it, Sean.
Yeah, we're going to start with the Astros, Seth. They lose last night 5-4 to the Oakland A's. Hunter Brown, not great. Here was Joe Espada on Hunter Brown's performance last night.
A lot of pitches, too. I think he did get some big strikeouts in big moments. But, you know, I thought that deep counts, you know, I seen him. He kind of sprayed this, you know, sprayed the zone a little bit too much. Like, he wasn't at putting hitters away more efficiently than he's done in the past. But, you know, he threw the ball well enough, gave us a chance there. And, you know, we had some opportunities, and we just couldn't capitalize.
Yeah, 5 earned runs in 5 innings, 7 strikeouts, 1 walk. He gave up 9 hits. It was really, to Espada's point, it was very trafficky for Hunter Brown. 97 pitches in 5 innings. Not his best outing, but he's been great. He's still... There was nothing last night, Seth, where it rips away at my trust in him down the stretch. You're almost forced to trust in Hunter Brown at this point.
Right.
You know, as one of the top two guys.
No, this isn't like when Spencer Arrighetti comes in and gets yanked after two-thirds of an inning.
Correct.
Or something like that. I just I look at Hunter Brown. He's reached veteran status in my mind.
Yeah.
Arrighetti's not at 100% full-bore veteran status yet, but in terms of dependability and everything else, all right, this is just another, you know, not a great outing for Hunter Brown, but not a disaster by any stretch of the imagination.
Yep. Jose Altuve left the game with some sort of right side discomfort. Here's what it sounded like on the – it was on a swing in the fifth inning. Here's what it sounded like.
Used his timeout, then called for the manager to talk to him. Something with his twisting motion, it seems like he's showing.
Yeah, he doesn't look comfortable at all.
We'll see what this next swing looks like here, 2-2. He's not even going to swing. He's going to bunt, and that's a strikeout. That's not a good sign. See if he stays in the game. That's not what you want to see with Altuve bunting the two strikes, not wanting to swing them.
Yeah, he did not stay in the game. They moved Mauricio Dubon to second base. Day game today, Altuve met with the media after the game, and he was kind of sloughing it off, saying he's not worried about it. They asked him if this was similar to the oblique injury that he suffered last year that knocked him out for an extended period of time. He said no. But he did say repeatedly, we'll just have to see how I feel when I wake up this morning.
Yeah, yeah. So we're in that old mode we're in of a wait and see.
Yeah.
I don't begrudge Altuve or the Astros organization for not having a lot of details on this, because a muscle strain is a muscle strain or whatever it is, and you do kind of wait and see how it feels the next day.
Yeah.
So the fact that they didn't send him off for imaging immediately, it makes me feel a little bit better that this is highly unlikely, I would guess, that this is something that keeps him out for an extended period of time.
I hope not. I hope not. The fact that he had an oblique injury last year actually makes me feel better, and that he's maybe just being super cautious with it. You know, doesn't want to turn.
I guess the only other part of it is he's 34 years old. He's only had 5 off days this entire season. He's just, because they dug themselves such a huge hole, and because they've had to call up so many minor leaguers. It's not. I mean, Dubon's needed pretty much everywhere else at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm. I worry. You know, we've seen Altuve banged up in the playoffs before, and now he's 34 years old with a muscular injury, and those tend not to bounce back quite as quickly when you're in your mid-30s.
110 first pitch today, and then they're off to L.A. to take on the Angels this weekend. They'll be without Chaz McCormick as well. Suffered a fracture to a finger. Here was Joe Espada saying Chaz is headed to the IL.
Oh, yeah. So Chaz has a small fracture in his right hand. So obviously that will be... NIL.
that you're ruling out the rest of the year? Or?
Oh, I can't tell. I can't give you a timeline. Just right now, it's just, you know, obviously IL.
Do you have a corresponding move?
Not yet. No. Right, thank you, guys.
Yeah, so for what it's worth, Chaz told the media after the game that he thinks he'll be back for the postseason. So we'll see. That's 3 weeks from now. So there's your Astros news. Mariners win, by the way, so it's a 3.5-game lead.
They won a game.
The AL West, can you believe that? Yeah, it's I jinxed it yesterday. by saying, yeah, the Mariners just keep losing. Let's get to the Texans. We talked about Joe Mixon winning Offensive Player of the Week in the AFC. Injury news, Dalton Schultz DNP yesterday with an ankle injury. So not limited. He did not practice with an ankle injury yesterday. How would you feel about going into Sunday's game with Cade Stover and Brevin Jordan as the only two tight ends if that were to happen?
I wouldn't feel, you know, down in the dumps and awful about it just because the Texans still, without any one of their starters at wide receiver, tight end, or running back, they still have an embarrassment of riches. That's how loaded they are right now. I'm not overly concerned about this as long as it's not something that's flirting with IR or something. But, they're better with Dalton Schultz in the game. Cade Stover, though, did very well for himself as a blocker, playing fullback at times. I think in the passing game, he's already got a relationship with C.J. Stroud. He's not Dalton Schultz yet, but... And Brevin Jordan, obviously, who, you know, Brevin with one catch on that play where CJ fell down on the glossy logo at midfield, kind of, I think that's where Brevin's going to show up at times this year. You're not going to be able to predict how, when, or where, but he's turned himself into a reliable option. So yeah. I don't feel awesome about Dalton Schultz potentially being banged up, but it's I'm not in panic mode over it.
No, and we'll see today. Maybe he's limited today and he's progressing, but we'll see. That wasn't anything we heard about after the game, Dalton Schultz with an ankle. Bears injuries, though, their wide receiving core is worrisome. Keenan Allen, for them, it's worrisome. Keenan Allen, a heel injury. Roma Dunze suffered a knee injury in his first game as a rookie on Sunday against the Titans. They both were DNP yesterday for the Bears.
And I think aside from the players themselves, watching that game, there were just multiple miscommunications between Caleb Williams and the wide receivers, you know, where, you know, a whole lot of hand gesturing going on both sides after plays, you know, when Caleb throws the ball and Adunze kind of breaks in a direction that Caleb didn't expect. I think Keenan Allen, who's a very savvy route runner, but doesn't, man, I... Boy, if I had to choose between Keenan Allen and Stephon Diggs right now, I am 100% get out of my face with any of that Keenan Allen
talk. Yeah, well, that's what we were saying yesterday. Sometimes the best deals are the ones you don't make. The Texans were in on the Keenan Allen talks before they went and got Diggs, so it worked out great for the Texans. I was disappointed when they didn't get Keenan Allen. I'm really happy now that they got Stephon Diggs.
Keenan Allen might be at the point where he's like entering the Robert Woods zone.
Yeah.
Of just, you know, reliable veteran dude who's. They tried to force the ball to him on a lot of shorter routes.
He's been banged up the last few years. Like, this isn't the first time. As someone who's had him on his fantasy team, I can tell you, banged up the last few years. As far as other transactions go, Texans did bring Dez King back and Troy Pride back to the practice squad. Jeff Okuda goes to injured reserve. Let's get to Deshaun Watson in the latest here in headlines before we get out. We'll hear from Deshaun later in the show. He did meet with the media yesterday in Cleveland. It was a very interesting press conference. But the big news there, Rusty Harden. Deshaun Watson has retained Rusty Harden's services, and Rusty Harden put a statement out on Deshaun's behalf yesterday. For those who are not, I'm assuming if you listen to a sports talk radio show on a Thursday this week, that by now you've heard the news that Deshaun Watson is being sued again for sexual assault, this time not in a massage setting. This was allegedly on a date that he had back in October of 2020, and it's a little more graphic than some of the things that were in the other lawsuits. Rusty Harden's statement on behalf of Deshaun Watson, quote, "Deshaun strongly denies the allegations in the Jane Doe lawsuit filed Monday. We've asked him not to comment further while this matter works its way through the courts, but are comfortable he will ultimately be vindicated. We will be ready to defend this case in court at the appropriate time, but don't intend to conduct our defense in the media. We would ask that people be patient while the legal process runs its course. In the meantime, Deshaun is going to focus his energy and concentration on football," end quote. Tony Busby posted on Instagram following this statement from Rusty Harden. It's a long post. I can't read the whole thing, but basically saying, hey, we approached Deshaun's team about this particular alleged victim 10 months ago. So this isn't anything that should be new to them. Deshaun said in his press conference yesterday, Seth, that this is the first he's hearing about this, that he was surprised by this lawsuit. And Tony Busby had put out a statement later in the day saying, no, we approached his team 10 months ago about this. So somebody's lying.
I've always, as I try to put myself in Deshaun's shoes on this, yeah. I'm just, the sheer volume and the number of various interactions and exchanges is kind of mind-blowing. I think even among, you could be diehard, hey, Deshaun did nothing wrong, et cetera, et cetera. The total number of interactions that he had with new and different women is kind of mind-blowing by even NFL athlete standards.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, I'm not surprised if Deshaun just genuinely can't keep track of all this stuff.
Busby kind of said that in his statement, too.
Yeah, I mean, this is, and it's
not
all,
as nicely as you did.
The amount of logistics and everything else that go into, like, even if you're a staunch Deshaun defender, you at least have to concede that, dude, this dude was sloppy
as hell. Yeah.
Like,
oh,
that's the very best you can say about him. Like, what the hell?
Our baseball talk in this segment was presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile, and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Up next, deep dive here on Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams is the enemy this Sunday. Seth has some great stuff here from doing a little film work on Caleb Williams that we're going to get to coming up in the next segment.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.